The last thing in the world that I ever dreamed I would ever be was a soldier. I got a degree at Columbia in New York so that I could teach philosophy of education to teachers. In my second year of teaching, it was just a beautiful day. And so I went to the school and I got my little breakfast, which was the bagel and the coffee and the New York Post. And I was going up to the top floor of our building. And as I got out of the elevator, I saw some students standing at the window facing south. And it was a very unusual sight. So I said, well, what's going on? And they said to me, Father Tim, a plane just flew into the World Trade Center. And I said to them, that's not a very funny thing to say. And they said, no kidding, really, look. Now, not on a TV, not over the radio, but literally out our window facing south, we saw the Twin Towers. And that was when the first one hit. A few minutes later, as you know, the second one did. And actually, as I had a colleague, I teach in School of Education. I had a colleague who supervised student teachers when they go out to do their practice. And she was called by her son that day. It was her first day teaching. And she was called by her son, who was working for Cantor Fitzgerald on the 103rd floor. He said, Mom, congratulations on your new job. We're going to pop a cork tonight, you know, to celebrate. See you then. And that's the last thing she ever heard of him. So looking out the window and seeing that, your priorities change. And I said to myself, I know that things will be different in my life because of what I'm looking at right now. And I said, I need to be with the people who are part of the response to this. And to go not just as a private citizen, but as a priest, as a Jesuit, as a disciple of Christ who really believes that to be a soldier is compatible with the Christian life, with being a Catholic.
And do you have to train as a soldier? I mean, I was wondering about this. Do you have to drill yes, sir, and go and do all the exercises and all of the things?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we do. One could argue that it's more of a gentleman's course for us old broken down dinosaurs than it is for an 18-year-old. But yeah, we had to be able to compete physically, and you know, the height and weight. We had to know drill and ceremony. We had to know, you know, the proper etiquette. We had to know, you know, the Army regulations and, you know, to obey. So, for example, when we go to our basic training, the first order of business is to make a soldier out of you, if you will. And then the second order of business is to make an officer out of you. And then the third one, and only then, is to make a chaplain out of you. So there was kind of three discrete aspects to the training. But, you know, the funny thing was, I was able to keep up with the 18 and 19-year-olds. I just did. And I was always a runner, you know. I was always and doing those kind of things always appealed to me. So
what age were you then?
Oh, gosh. True confessions here. I was 43. Yeah, yeah. So I was at the age that most people are getting out of the Army and retiring from the Army and not entering. So that was kind of odd. And my peers were people who were at least 20 years younger than I.
So. And as a chaplain, then we can understand then you had your army training, your officer training.
Yeah.
You were older, you had a PhD in philosophy. Right. Were there any times that you felt like saying, oh, come on, lads, give me a break here? Mm-hmm. Or did you feel, this is what I do, I need to do this to get to the next level? Mm. What kind of insights did you have? And then I'll talk to you about what the chaplain training was.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I told some of my colleagues at Fordham that I was going to join the Army, after they stopped laughing, some of them said, "Well, you know, that's really good, congratulations, way to go," and they were very supportive. Some of them said, "Oh, you better." watch out, you know, the soldiers, their language is going to turn the air blue, you know. On the one hand, and on the other hand, the only one who had been himself in the service had said to me, he said, Tim, be very respectful of the soldiers, because they may not have a degree, but in terms of their technical knowledge and the skills that they bring to the game, a PhD doesn't even begin to capture what they have. I always remembered that. I don't remember his name, but I remember his advice. He was right. You know, the lowliest, you know, E1 or E2 has a skill that I will never have. I just don't have it. And I have to respect that. And I think that's to the degree that in any way I had any success, it was because I had respect for what they did and who they were, you know. But as far as the language is concerned, the funny thing is, a chaplain has an effect on soldiers. They're very respectful. I virtually never had anybody who was vulgar in the presence of a chaplain. I do think that there's a kind of, if you will, a kind of civilizing effect that that the chaplains do and should have, which is the reason why we have to be people who set a good example in the way we speak, the way we treat people, not playing favorites, whatever. But just to show them that we care and that we really want to be with them. I remember once I was with the soldiers, we have to do a 12-mile foot march every once in a while, you know, just to stay in shape. You know, it's what they call rucksacking, you know. And I remember two soldiers had different reactions to me. One of them, who was a female, actually, she says to me, "Sir, where's your weapon?" And I said, "Well, I'm the chaplain. I'm not allowed to carry a weapon." And she says to me, "Well, what good are you?" but another one who...
And what did you answer?
I said, "Well, you know what? I have to think about that. I'll have to figure out if I'll be any kind of benefit to you, you know." But we became very good friends. We had a good laugh over it. But another soldier who happened to be the assistant of the commander, who actually was an excellent shot, he says to me, "Sir, what in the world are you doing here with us? You don't have to go out and do this foot march." And so I said to him, "Sergeant, where else would I be?"
And you were with him and you went to places like Iraq. Right. And like awful things happened there to people, to American soldiers and to the people in Iraq as well, the Iraqi civilians. And you write, I read something that you wrote, and you talk about what it is like to be there as a presence with people who have had to take the life of another human being. And you talk about what people go through, what the soldiers went through. Tell me a bit about that. It was a very interesting take.
Yeah. If I hadn't actually gone through it, I probably would not have appreciated as personally and deeply as it turns out that I did. The last people in the world who want to go out and kill and maim and destroy are soldiers. The most peace-loving people that I know are soldiers. But when called upon to defend their country, to defend the Constitution. But as we know, there's a difference morally, and this is something that the tradition of the church tells us, there's a difference morally between killing as such and murder. And so we can say morally that a person may not be guilty of a terrible crime, and yet, as a human being, people who have taken the lives of other people do suffer from tremendous fallout from that. It's not something that somebody does cavalierly. And so many of these people are suffering. They did not want to. Their intention was not to kill. Their intention was to contain evil, to prevent greater evil from taking place. But emotionally, they are still dealing with the fact that they took the life of another person. So what do I do? And that's a hard experience for soldiers to go through, you know. And it was a great privilege to be with them in the midst of that.
Yeah, and to help them work through that.
Correct,
As a Catholic chaplain.
Right. In many ways, it can be a traumatic experience. And it's not to discount the fact that there are psychological dimensions to killing, because there are. And people who have suffered psychologically from that deserve to be helped, deserve to get treatment for that trauma. At the same time, I do think that people who are in an experience like that are also asking very deep questions, profound questions, questions that are will face every human being at one point in his or her life. Where did I come from? Where am I going? What is the good life? What is good? What is evil? What does it mean to be righteous and just? And how do I deal with the conflicts that come because I'm facing evil? Because they're dealing with literally life and death decisions every single day, soldiers, and usually at a very early age, 18, 19, 20, 21, they're dealing with these issues when they're very young. And it can either break them, or it can give them an insight into the human condition that is uncommon among their peers. What is it that a chaplain does? Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, Muslim, we have Buddhist, we have Hindu. What is it that we try to do? We try to help our soldiers face those questions.